All right, welcome back, everybody. We're talking with True Ott about all the various historical inaccuracies in his view, and also in terms of what we've been able to detail so far with everything from the Red Symphony, the Frankfurt School, and everything else. We're having an interesting conversation here. And I guess I'd like to begin to ask you a little bit, True, how you then, I guess, combat some of the criticism against you, considering the things we've talking about. There's a lot of people who simply would dismiss you as being anti-Semitic, that, you know, why should I listen to you? There's no reason to do that. And I don't know if you personally is concerned with that or feel that you need to speak to everyone and everybody, but is that something that you think about? And that's also earlier why I asked about terminology and everything else. What do you think?
Well, again, I just have to say where my research goes, and I don't really have to play the corporate game. You know, a lot of people are, again, paralyzed by fear of that. Fear they may be terminated from their job. Fear they may be arrested. In some countries, that's a very real problem. But again, it's just another symptom that's the truth. You know, you shouldn't be afraid to tell the truth of the numbers and the figures where they show. And I have no axe to grind. I have a number of Jewish people that I deem to be very, very close friends. I talked to them about my testimony of and understanding of Jesus Christ. They think it's very interesting, but again, they have a culture where they don't believe Christ was genuine. So we just agree to disagree on that. But they're good people as far as treating other people well. They just quietly go about their faith, and I'm okay with that. I really am. Do they call me a Jew hater? No, I don't think they would ever do that, because you know what? We've had this discussion with them. I have had this discussion with them and their family, even bringing their rabbi in. And you know what they say? You know, you're right. We've got to, as organized Jews, we've got to stand against these people, because they're giving everybody a bad name. See, they understand it's a problem. And so you ask me what I do about it. Well, I got to expose the hoax, okay? And you got to, you know, go back to figure out which is the biggest hoax and which needs to be exposed the most. And that's what I just simply do in my speech, my rhetoric. It's just telling the truth.
Why is it, do you think, that there are so many problems, I guess we can call it, on this planet with mankind, with the different agendas, domination? There seems to be ideas of taking over and running the show completely, you know, New World Order, everything. There seems to be something that makes it difficult for a lot of people to just live on this planet and live in peace and just chill out. What's wrong? What's going on here?
Well, again, I go to the really important guide is the scriptures, the New Testament, Old Testament, both combined. I mean, virtually all the questions and problems can be answered there, really, honestly. The scriptures say that the root of all evil is what? The love of money. Not so much money. Money's just a medium of exchange. But the love of money, the greed of money, you know, is really the root of all evil. And that's really where it comes down to here. Because if you really have a strong love of wealth, of the earthly things, if you have that to be your God, really, if that's what drives you, then you're going to be stamping on people's hands, kicking them in the head, doing whatever it takes to get ahead in this world, and you're not going to be a solution. You're going to be part of the problem, you see. So, yeah, it's a matter of a mindset. It's a matter of a change of heart, and it all has to begin with honesty. You got to tell the truth. You've got to, you know, not hide in fear of offending somebody, ultimately.
Do you think that there are is there just one truth, or from individual perspectives as human beings, can we see things differently and yet they are the truth to us?
Well, each person has their... Of course, but now as you define truth, you know, when Christ came before Pontius Pilate and said, I'm here to declare the truth. That's my mission. That's who I am. He said he's the truth, the way, and the life. I mean, that's the triune personality of Jesus Christ. So Pontius Pilate asked the same question that Christ, you know, said. Pilate said, what is truth? You know, that's the big question. Truth is best described as in the dictionary, it's empirical reality. Now, we all have different, you know, myopic views of reality, but I'm talking now about facts, not opinions, just absolute, incontrovertible, hardcore facts, Heinrich.
And do you think that in that, how we derive a fact or how we come to the conclusions of fact, if that is dependent on human perception, then to me that becomes something problematic, correct? Because it can waver, and as we know from people who are in everything from games like Telephone to traumatic experiences, they do not recall the real, you know, events that really took place. So there's a problem there, correct?
Oh, indeed, and that's part of the control mechanisms to keep empirical truth hidden. And so they replace the truth with a mirage, an image that's based on, again, television programming, movie programming, radio talk show hosts like Rush Limbaugh and others who were programmed and absolutely are paid by the same group of people. You see, it is problematic. I did an expose on this. You know, the major radio show talk show hosts, from Sean Hannity to Glenn Beck to Rush Limbaugh, they're part of a syndicate, their syndication called Clear Channel.
Sure.
Clear Channel's owned by the Mossad of Israel, ultimately. You look who controls Bain Capital, which is the parent company of Clear Channel. Bain Capital, Mitt Romney's company, is a Mossad operation, without a doubt about it.
They had a lot of interesting connections, Bain, didn't they?
Absolutely. Their director, the CEO of the company, is a woman named Orit Gadish, the daughter of the Israeli Defense Forces top general. I mean, that's just what it is. Is that being anti-Semitic to point the truth out of that, too? See?
Sure. No, exactly. It is what it is on one level. And the question is how different people, you know, tackle that, or again, what the true purpose at the end of it is, what the true agenda at the end of the day is, if there is an agreement on a level like what you've said so far. Is there an agreement by certain Jewish people then? Is there an agenda within the race? Is this a secret society thing? Is it, you know, pseudo-Masonic? Is there, I mean, as we know, there are conglomerations that are interest groups in any walk of life, wherever we go. They're always going to be that, I think. It's just human nature. Conspire means to breathe together, you know? And this is just a natural, you know, effect, if you will, of being human. So the question is that we're all trying to get to is, who knows what, and what is the agreement? On what level is it? How deep into, you know, politics and media and business and education does it go? And you know, so that's where we're at. We're trying to figure that out.
Well, it comes down to this basic equation: who is in control, and who is being controlled? And there's different levels of that, of course. On the top of the food chain, the hierarchical structure, if you want to call it that, I would say there was an interdimensional person called the prince of this world. The Bible calls him Satan. Is that a real individual? I would absolutely, from my experience, say yes, indeed. There is an organized group that have sworn loyalty to him, as opposed to Yahweh, the God that came to save men from this lost world. Okay, now that's again what people say. Well, you know, I can't really buy that stuff. Now, see, that's again programming. That's again people saying, well, you know, now he's going to go off into the boogeyman type of thing. See, we're all been programmed to do that. But it's the fact of the matter is there are practicing Satanists in this world who have met, personally met, Satan because of their black magic hexes that they and the system. He's very real. Believe me, he's very real. Now, the top of that food chain then becomes his top agents, bloodlines, if you will, that they've been working with him and for literally thousands of years. You see, and from a philosophical standpoint, Heinrich, you know, all things are there for ultimately for the good. Even the evil can be looked in some ways as being okay, because without evil, how are you able to even grow spiritually? You see, if you don't have the black squares on the checkboard, on the checkerboard, and the white squares, you know, they got to be equal and balanced, or you have no progression, no growth. So that's another philosophical treatise and question, right?
Yeah, well, of course. I mean, it's I understand that philosophical point of view. It's all part of God's plan, and even Satan is part of that, correct?
Yeah, and that's what I'm. But the point I'm getting at is, you don't want the black squares to totally overcome the white squares, or you have no game. There has to be balance. There just has to be. And from my viewpoint, the darkness is overpowering the light. And that's just the way I see it. And so I've been asked this question by some very respected top theological leaders. What's your agenda? What are you trying to accomplish? I said, my agenda is just to seek balance. I don't want the evil to overcome completely the light. And they looked at me and like said, well, okay. I said, look, one man cannot in no way eliminate all the evil in this world. You can't do it. You're nutty. You're psycho if you think you can. But what my agenda is to say, hey, this is imbalanced. There's too much evil in the world, in my opinion. Got to scale it back a little bit. Okay, this is a fallen world, Heinrich. I mean, this is the domain of the prince of the earth, and it's his gig. It really is.
It's interesting to get your take on this. What do you say that his interest is in this world, and he surely then has to be tied to it in some way? Otherwise, it would just take off, go elsewhere. Correct?
Yeah. I don't know the whole picture. I don't claim to know everything. I know enough to be dangerous. I would just hope that there is a plan in place that all things will be made okay at the end. I don't know what that will be. I just know that at the end of the day, that Jesus Christ is Lord, is God.
And there's programming going on in religion and the Bible and the origins of Bible and all that?
Well, of course there has been, and of course there's ongoing. There's all kinds of private interpretations of what God's word says. And, you know, the Mormonism is a classic example of that, you know. This Joseph Smith, he says, well, you know, I got to restore the church to the earth. It was lost through all these dark ages of apostasy. And so he's made this worldwide movement that has millions of people involved in it now. I just respectfully and strongly disagree with that.
And that and in many regards, true. Sorry to interrupt here, but it feels to me as well, as I'm looking at this, that we do have a world of a lot of good intended people that are doing an awful lot of evil because they think they're in the position of, you know, doing the right thing. They're on God's side, right? I'm the vehicle which the world will be restored through, pretty much.
Oh yeah, you have that all the time. You have, and the Bible is full of warnings against these wolves in sheep's clothing, these And it's called a strong delusion that would even deceive the very elect, whatever that means, right? Well, a delusion is simply a lie appearing to be factual, appearing to be real. What bigger delusion can there be than a group of descendants from the liaison, polygamous liaison of Edom, which is Esau, calling themselves the covenant people of Israel? That's a huge hoax, a massive, huge hoax. See, and all other hoaxes seem to stem out of that big one. And who is the God of all lies? Well, it goes back again to that fallen angel called Satan. Where Christ is the embodiment of truth, Satan, aka Lucifer, is the embodiment of all lies and false whisperings. So that's pretty much the litmus test to me.
Let's go back a little bit to, well, it might be a long way to go, but we've been philosophical here for a little bit. So let's go back to international socialism and talk about how this has subverted the world and how it's continuing to this day. We talked briefly a little bit about the Frankfurt School before, and that's, I see that at least as an extension to that, or maybe even a point where this is the origin. I remember many years ago I got a hold of the book Fire in the Minds of Men that was tracking the revolutionary movements, and that this is also kind of a, well, it's almost like a religious conviction in people that they again come from this position of doing the right thing. We're going to change the world. We're going to make it, you know, fair and equal for all. And of course, in that process, as I said before, a whole lot of, you know, wickedness and evil has been done, in my opinion.
Well, then, yeah, you're right on.
Yeah, go ahead.
Right on. You're absolutely right with that. You've got the socialist model where all work together for the common good. Yeah, I submit that's a wonderfully righteous good thing, and probably the model of Christianity ultimately, living in a Christian commune where really all people are evenly wealthy. It's a great thing. It's a great idea and complex. The problem is you get people that come in and say, well, I could manipulate that and make me the wealthiest of all. And that's where you get these communist leaders, these Bolshevik synagogue of Satan leaders. See, they pervert that. Now, when I was going to the university in my college life, I originally started out as a freshman declaring as a political science major. This was back in 1978, today, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the topics of on our curriculum was studying socialism, and the model then was this evil dictator, this absolute nutcase in North Africa, the country of Libya, called Muammar Gaddafi, you know, and yet we never really studied his Green Book. Never did. We were just, you know, told this is a classic example of a power mad dictator, you know, trying to take over the people. Now, what Gaddafi had put out in the 70s in his Green Book was, you know, here in the West, we were just mortified because, again, it's Jewish, I shouldn't say Jewish, Khazarian propaganda, right?
Mm-hmm.
That this is an evil dictator. My goodness, it wasn't until just about 4 years ago that I revisited, you know, why is Gaddafi suddenly not so bad a guy in the African countries, in the world of many of the Middle East? They were looking at Libya as a model for success. Well, it begins by reading the Green Book. I mean, objectively, without the jaundiced eye of prejudice, just really studying the Green Book and making notes of it. And so I did that. I thank goodness for the internet, I was able to download the Green Book. Muammar Gaddafi's Green Book. You can get it free on the internet still, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I was stunned. I says, you know, this is right. There's nothing in that book at all that is problematic. Even if you want to talk about what I think is the ultimate voice of the people. He explained that the two-party system, you know, whether it's Republican, Democrat, whether it's, you know, whatever, it's always flawed because always there's going to be money powers manipulating both sides. He explained that very well in the 1970s. It's absolutely right. You see? So ultimately, two-party systems, when you look at it outside the box, it's really best described as fascism, controlled by corporate elites.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what America is. I mean, good heavens, in the halls of Congress, you see the fascist symbols right there in our House of Representatives.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
What does he see as being the correct alternative to fascism? To have real, true government of the people, by the people, for the people? He lays it out in his book. And he's absolutely right, folks.
What does it say? Can you summarize that a little bit for us, for those who don't know? I haven't read the Green Book.
Well, I suggest you do so. It's a fantastic read, really. It basically to give the power. I mean, the real power to the people. You got to go by distributing. I mean, having the people absolute partners in the wealth of the nation. Now, Libya, its main wealth was oil. Is oil. As they were exploring for oil in the 70s and 80s, doing the assays underground, they came across a huge reservoir of fresh water, a huge ocean of fresh water reserved under the desert sands, right? It was even more valuable than oil, but there was a lot of oil too. So what Gaddafi did is he nationalized the oil, put extremely strict rules and structure around the natural resources, whatever it would be. Every barrel of oil pumped out of Libya that was sold internationally as part of OPEC, Gaddafi nationalized that, put it in trust for the people, and they did benefit from it. Man, that's huge. They eventually, after three decades, the people became highly educated. They had I don't know if they still do, but they had incredible health care. Education was not something you had to buy and get a huge student loan to pay for. Education was free, as much as you wanted, because it was paid for by oil reserves. And it became the Geneva Switzerland of the Middle East. It became the Switzerland of the Middle East in their standard of living. It just flat out did. The gold, the currency, was backed by actual gold purchased by oil dollars, transformed over. I mean, the dinar structure that he set was poised to topple the United States dollar as the pricing structure for OPEC because it was sound and it was valuable. Couldn't have that, could you? So the powers that be had to topple this madman.
Yeah, he was, he was dethroned, and just like Saddam, I think he was put in place at the right time and then decided to take him out when he wasn't. Well, he wasn't maybe as an individual not playing ball anymore, but it was not beneficial to the bigger structure overall. I mean, a lot of things happen has happened now in Libya. Consequently, a lot of the money was taken out. There's a financial heist, basically what took place in Libya.
Absolutely, and here's the key thing. I've never been to Libya. I've never met Muammar Gaddafi, but guess what? I was able to meet some Libyans who were here in Utah as part of the Libyan education process. They were studying at the university here in their particular field, all paid by Libyan national assets. And boy, these three of these people that I interviewed, Heinrich, were women that just they couldn't believe the general consensus when they talked about their leader, Gaddafi. People looked at him like, what are you? See, they're programmed to be anti-Gaddafi. They said, I don't know why they're such an anti-Muammar Gaddafi here in Utah. They think he's crazy, and they don't see him. They don't, like we do. We are empowered women. We are liberated women. You know, but yet we know who we are. We have, you know, we're not downtrodden like other Muslim countries. We don't have to wear veils. You know, we are free. And then you read that whole part of the Green Book about where his philosophy on women. It's exactly right. One of the most beautiful two or three pages on the role of a created woman, of God's created blessing to man of a woman. Beautiful, beautiful philosophy there. I couldn't write anything better.
Now, was he Muslim in nature somewhat, or you know?
Well, I think he was. In my opinion of him after reading the Green Book was, I think he was spiritually enlightened. I do. I think he mm-hmm. was. He had to be in source of somehow in contact with God. I do. Because his prose, his writing there in the Green Book is—I gotta say—it's wow, it's neat. Okay.
All right.
And yet it's—and I talk about it to people in my little Christian church I go to, for one, and they look at me like, "You're crazy. Gaddafi's nuts." You know. Again, it's programming, and I tell them, "Hey, just read the Green Book and then decide for yourself." Well, it's just propaganda. It doesn't really the way it really is. But see, again, that's what you've been led to believe because of hearing a lie often enough. You can become programmed to that way of thinking. They don't step outside the box and look at it objectively, like most everything in America today, you know.
Yeah, and around the world, obviously, this is a. We're all plagued by it, all the countries around the world, and there's very little thinking for themselves anymore. And problematic is the educational system as anything, and people are programmed since they're little children, and it's just overall though it just kind of heading in the wrong direction because most countries are beginning to look at more and more like. Fascist as it goes. I mean, for instance, even Sweden, those countries who are seen as the beacons of some kind of egalitarian utopia around the world, where we in Sweden have outlawed homeschooling, for example. So the educational system is rotten, but there's no real alternatives, and you are basically under threat of violence, you know, from the government. They're going to come and get your child no matter what, you know. So where do we go from here, in your opinion? How do we turn around this oncoming tide of just a whole lot of darkness, if you will? True.
Well, again, for my subjective worldview, my look at the truth, it really is turning back to the scriptures. I mean, for me personally, when you go into the text, I mean, really deeply study Christ's teachings in the New Testament. This is all there. All the answers are there. They really are. You know, and here is my subjective, and I hope it's more objective than subjective, but the definition of evil. Okay. Heinrich, if I were to ask you to define evil for me, what would your response be?
My response would be evil is all the suppressed, neglected, and maybe even consciously hidden aspects of ourselves that are allowed to bloom through our own unconscious and therefore through the actions that we do in the world. And it's all the things that we don't want to deal with, that we try to hide from and run away from. And again, in a way, to simplify that then, would be to hide from the truth creates evil.
Good. That's a good definition. I sprung that on you. I've done that before to people, and they look at me like, it's hard. That's a hard definition. You did very good. I congratulate you. Because you know what evil is when you see it, don't you? You know it. You feel it. but it's one of those things that's kind of hard to define. Let me give you my definition very simply. Okay, it's the absence of Christ's presence, ultimately. You said it was the absence of truth. Well, Christ to me is truth. And there's different levels of evil, isn't there? This is not so bad evil, but this massacre of these thousands of people in this village, that's the epitome of evil, right? Mm. It stinks. So there's different levels of evil. So there's just different levels of separation from Christ and his goodness. That, to me, is where it sums up, okay? Mm-hmm. So to eliminate evil, we need to eliminate the levels of evil, and the answer to me is just, again, the model of Jesus of Nazareth, the Prince of Peace, the author and the epitome of all truth, okay?
So self-sacrifice, is that what you're saying, ultimately?
Well, ultimately, you know, yeah, you've got to emulate.
Sorry to interrupt, but because there's a schism there for me and a breakup, because in some regards, I see Christian Western civilization as being very individualistic. It's for the individual, etc. If that's really the truth in terms of the theology, I don't know. But that's what you hear. That's kind of a common simplification, if you will. But then on the other end, at the same time, there is this idea about self-sacrifice, that you're supposed to give yourself up. That's really what Jesus done, right? That's the pinnacle of his achievement, is that he sacrifices himself for everyone else, or for their sins in this case. So is that a model to live by then? Is that what you're saying?
Well, yes, in the term of self-sacrificing your false self, your ego. And that means, you know, to be really, truly, in my mind, a Christian, you've got to sacrifice that carnal self. You know, the Bible talks about being born again, literally coming a new creature under Christ, a new creature of truth, right? If you really want to fully embody that, you've got to crucify on the cross, if you will, your false self, which is your carnal self, your ego, which in and of itself is really inherently evil. The fallen self, your false pride and ego is an enemy, you know, to truth, ultimately, because it's an ultimate lie when you really get down to the nuts and bolts of it, you know. Everybody has a little devil on their shoulder, in other words. You know, it's, wow, what's in it for me? What can I do to benefit from this? And this is where the manipulation begins, see? This is where the whole root of evil starts. What's in it for me? How do I benefit? No, it's not about me anymore. It's about him. It's about Christ. It's about God. You see, and the promise to the Christian is you put Christ, a.k.a. God, first in your life, and all good things will be added to you. And what could be better than eternal life as the Christian promise, see? And life is, again, defined as just expanding knowledge and living, right?
Would you agree that there is a natural impulse as well in most human beings to, I guess, mend for yourself and your family, I guess you could say, before others? Because there is also, at the same time, at the flip side of all this, I see this kind of the ideology of just caring about everyone else more than you care about yourself can also cause a lot of problems in the world. And it's an antithesis to what you just talked about, that if there is a natural drive, this is what I'm trying to get to, if there's a natural impulse as a from like an animal instinct almost in man to make sure that you're protected, if you will, first and safe, if you will, and then your family in the extension instead of everyone else, then some people would say, well, okay, so that's what's evil. We have to disconnect them from that natural impulse. And I've heard from Frankfurt School kind of people and others, and also connected with some of the socialist ideologies, that it's really about bypassing that natural drive, if you will, within the person. And that's why, for instance, the family unit has been such a dangerous thing for you know, the Fabians and the Frankfurt School and everything else, because it's about caring and mending for your family first. There is a core unit there, and that's they would have to destabilize that to be able to kind of steer society and the world into the direction where they want. I'm sure you understand what I'm getting with this.
Absolutely. Yeah. You're right on. And that brings us back to, again, a page out of the Green Book of Muammar Gaddafi, where he talks about what women, you know, they're partners with God for creation. That's a special thing, you see. It really truly is. I look at my wife and my family. Oh, my. You know, I can only imagine as a male the travail, the pain, the near death of going into childbirth. I mean, especially our third child. My wife was extremely toxic. He had toxemia. We just about died from that, and she was basically comatose for about 8 hours. We didn't know if we'd even keep her. She literally walked through the valley of the shadow of death to bring another soul into this world. Now, I can only, you know, wow. When you have that type of selfless love where you're giving birth and you're facing death to bring birth in, there is a bond there, and that's a family bond. That's what we're talking about here, okay? The role of a husband, you know, again, this is why Christ likened the church body to a marriage contract, that he's the bridegroom, that the church or the body of Christ is the bride. You know, you've got to put things into perspective. And he's never asking anybody to put aside a wife and children to follow him. No, it's to be modeled after him. Okay? You got to prioritize and you got to balance. That's all part of it. Nobody's talking about being extremist, you know, as a true Christian. You know, first in your life is God, is Christ. Second, you know, your spouse and your family is modeled unto him. And that's really the model. Again, I got to say it. It comes out in the pages of the Green Book of Gaddafi. That same teaching, whether, you know, there's no ism about it. There's no labeling of whether it's Muslim or Christian or anything. It's just basic, solid, good way of looking at life. Okay? So, I mean, in the big picture, Heinrich, it really comes down to harmony, to balance. You know, again,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Following the really honest teachings of Christ gives you that, at least in my opinion. And that's exactly why these Satanists, the synagogue of Satan, hates Christians so badly, because it's either Christ or Antichrist to them. And there's no room for both to coexist.
What do you make of all the? Because I want to stick on that point a little bit. The man or the father or the husband in some cases seems to be one that's very demonized. If you watch, I think anyone who watch any TV series today can hardly deny that they're all portrayed as being Homer Simpson. You know, the wife is their mommy. They're stupid. They can't do anything on their own. They're partly responsible for why the family is so, you know, screwed up or whatnot. And it's basically across the board in any TV series. And this has been, you know, combination of Madison Avenue and again, Frankfurt School kind of business as usual to try to show the man as being this kind of creature. What is that all about, do you think?
Well, indeed, it's part of the agenda. And the Frankfurt School, the Fabian Society, it is truly an agenda. It's the liberal progressive mindset that it takes a village. It takes government to adequately raise children. And frankly, fathers, for the most part in America now, are pretty much letting it happen that way. They are no better than Homer Simpsons. They want to just go to the bar and drink their suds, watch their TV, watch their football games, and let the kids be raised by the schools, see? So, yeah, it's again, part of the programming, part of the identity. Well, I'm just here to have some hot sex with my wife, make a baby or two, and let the establishment take care of them. See, that's a problem. You bet it is.
And there's a lot of bad chemicals in everything from... the things we eat to the things we wear and touch and clean with and everything else that actually is changing the chemical makeup of you know, what a man is and what a woman is. It's being the roles are being reversed almost in some cases, and it's a tremendous insidious plan behind the release of these chemicals actually into the consumer products, and that's a really big and important angle that just can be added on top of all of this. That I think that there is a reason why the drive, if you will, of the men are going down. It's a chemical reason. At the same time, there's a reverse of the brain chemistry happening as well. Actually, it's really interesting.
Absolutely.
Study.
Absolutely. Absolutely, no doubt about that. That's where I'm really my credentials are in nutrition. I lecture constantly about that, and this is where I try to be kind of on the safe ground with this, you know, because when I talk nutrition and do my my lectures on that, I don't go into any of this other. I keep it separated, right?
Sure, sure. Well, why don't we talk a little bit about that? If that's an aspect, also that's actually an area where people can, well, it's not that they can't do anything in the other things we talked about, informing yourself and learning what is your truth is, of course, step one in all this. But if there's something we can do about in reversing our capability of becoming, you know, more well-versed in the truth and actually even wanting to find out it, I think it's deeply connected to our health, you know, our body, the way we feel and everything else. Because if something's off there, we're not going to have energy or intention to want to do anything else. So nutrition in all of this, Drew, tell
us
about it.
You know, I found, again, Heinrich, it's part of the agenda. It absolutely is. And I don't think it's by accident at all that this movement has resulted in, just like you said, the poor nutrition of the human organism. Let me explain. In 1948, at the end of World War II, there was an operation, quite covert. It's called Operation Paperclip. The OSS, the precursor to the modern-day CIA, Central Intelligence Agency, brought over these top, flat-out Nazi scientists into American mainstream, and they brought them out. One of the things that happened in 1951, there's a little French village, the south of France, called Pont-Saint-Esprit. Happened to be the birthplace of John F. Kennedy's Jackie's grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Pont-Esprit. This place hit the world news in 1951 because everybody went crazy in this little village. There were deaths. There were people. There were like 50 of them confined to an insane asylum. They were nuts. They were seeing hallucinations. They were babbling. They were climbing the walls. And the investigation, the fledgling United Nations World Health Organization came in, and they said it was ergot poisoning,
mm-hmm, yeah.
mold poisoning, right?
On the wheat.
Well, actually, they said it was actually in the seeds they were using.
In the seeds, okay, yeah.
Yeah, it was. They were mostly. It was demonized in America for the seed, a millet seed was then demonized. America was mostly a millet production. Millet was the main grain seed.
And,
okay?
And that's, by the way, that's much better than wheat, but I guess you're coming to that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So 1951, the Secretary of Agriculture under Dwight David Eisenhower, his name was Ezra Taft Benson, also happened to be an LDS Mormon apostle. Okay. Ezra Taft Benson basically put in legislation and orders demonizing millet, and at that point grain became the number one crop of America.
Hmm.
It took time, but it was grain. Now, what's wrong with that picture? Well, here's what's wrong with that. Grain, unless it's sprouted, grain is full of anti-nutrients, toxic substances. Okay. I've been saying this for 15 years, Heinrich, and just now I'm being proven to be right. There's quite a movement. There's a book written called Grain Belly rather than Beer Belly. It's Grain Belly, a great read, documenting what's really going on in America. Because where everything and big agribusiness, these big corporate combines, again, run? Look at who's run. Look who runs them. Same group of families, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
These big agribusinesses are where everything is grain. Whether it's the Fruit Loops the children eat in the morning, they're extruded. The grain is put into a mash, put in through a high heat process, and absolutely destroys the protein structures. Okay, that's bad enough. But you've got something called oxalic acid and phytic acid in the regular grain, the whole grain, right? These two structures are toxic in the bowel to the point where you can't absorb minerals.
Yeah.
Now, if you can't absorb the minerals are what's called coenzyme factors because they help the cells produce enzymes. The different endocrine structures of the body must have enzymes to produce hormones, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have the basic minerals in your body, you're not going to be able to produce the enzymes, and then you're not going to be able to produce the hormones. That's the cycle, okay? Now, if you're lacking hormones, guess what happens?
Well, everything happens. That's not supposed to happen.
one of the hormones your body produces in the pancreas is insulin. If you can't produce insulin on a regular basis, you're going to have type 2 diabetes. You're going to be hypoglycemic. You're going to have all kinds of emotional ups and downs and roller coaster.
You see, the endocrine system is disrupted.
Absolutely. The whole endocrine system is disrupted. But if you're not able to produce in the pineal and pituitary glands, you're not able to produce in the male part of the body, your testosterone,
yeah.
You're going to become effeminate. You're going to become, you're going to look at a man's backside and start lusting after it. Okay? The problem, I got to tell you, as a PhD in nutrition, and as a lecturer trying to get people awake to what's going on, this whole lesbian, gay, transgender community system is basically because of a disruption in male hormones and female hormones across the board.
Yeah. Why is that not looked at all when we do know so much? We've had other people on the program talking about this as well, how it's disruptive to the you know, the early stages of the fetus, that it's in development, and it's also very much depending on what the parent is eating. There's even other examples in more older civilizations, I guess we could call them, where they actually ate meat and other things that was really high in estrogen, and this was producing all kinds of birth defects and weird consequences after that. But why is this not looked at, do you think?
It goes back to the halls of academia, the Frankfurt School influence. This is part of an appendage of that agenda, the Frankfurt School. Absolutely no doubt about it. They've known about this for at least the 1940s, at least.
Mm-hmm.
These aren't stupid people. These are scientists. These are the heads of, again, the Nazi scientific research, which, again, is funded by this group of people. I tell you, it's just amazing how it all intertwines and comes out. So yeah, I'm sitting here in my home city of Utah. Okay, I've uncovered an absolute link to autism in kids. Yeah, vaccines are toxic. The mercury load is toxic to these young kids. That's part of the picture, but it's not the only picture. The overload in oxalic acid and phytic acid. I've taken urine samples of a dozen autistic children in Utah and taken urine samples for non-autistic children. The oxalic acid levels are off the charts.
Hmm.
Okay, there's a reason for everything. Everything is not happening by an act of God. There's man's messing it up.
Sure, yeah.
Okay, God doesn't make mistakes. Man makes the mistakes.
The things were, I think, pretty okay in the beginning, and things were on track. But then, as soon as mankind starts to fiddle with it and think that there is an error with it, and try to adjust it and fix it, that's where a lot of the avalanche of problems began, right? So,
and so the next phase is you got the GMO crops, You got the demise of the family grain farm. Okay, mm-hmm. It's been taken over by these again huge agribusiness combines. Monsanto brings in their GMO miracle wheat that doesn't have any. It has antibiotics into it already. It's mm-hmm. got yeah. all this bugs. All these things are in the genetic makeup of this outer shell of the wheat. This is all ground up now, and it becomes part of the staple diet of America. And it's just flat out poisoning America and the world. Yep. It truly is.
Yep.
So what do you do? Well, hey, the answer is in the Bible. I'm telling you. it there really is. Even here, John chapter 12, verse 24. This is I tell this in my lectures, and people either gravitate to this or their eyes glaze over and says, "Oh, this guy's a Bible creature, right? He's an extremist." No, this is a very simple little parable of Jesus Christ to certain Greeks. These Greeks were absolutely medical school teachers, if you want to call them that. They were disciples of Hippocrates. They were teaching the people of Judea medical properties, how to teach, how to be doctors, basically, right? They made an audience with Christ. Now, all the things he could tell them about healing, he made in one little simple parable verse, and that's found in John 12:24. He says, if a grain of wheat falls to the ground and becomes, I'm paraphrasing it now, if it falls to the ground and germinates, it brings forth great fruit. Now, what is he talking about there? The community of Masada, called the Essenes, that followed Christ's teachings to the letter, they did nothing but sprout their wheat. And I'm talking about 3 days. Christ was in the tomb 3 days, right? 3 days of putting water on a simple little kernel of wheat changes it dramatically. Guess what happens? Your oxidates, your phytic acids, all of your harmful preservative type of things with this dead kernel, they disappear. There's 63 different protein structures that flat out disappear or are greatly reduced after the germination process. And then in replace of those 63 transmute into 35 incredible life-giving enzyme structures. Incredible transmutation. Grain is not it's something that God put on this earth for the benefit of man, but it has to germinate for 3 days. Don't eat it unless it's germinated. You know, my goodness, this is a big part of the solution, Heinrich. If people listening to this show could just understand that. Take your grain, hopefully get not certified non-GMO grain, hopefully get organic that's certified, free of pesticides. Just put it in distilled water, wash it real good, put it in distilled water, put some lemon juice with it, and in 3 days, dry that grain out and then grind it up. It's sprouted wheat flour. It's full of enzymes, full of life-giving protein, energy, hydrogen, H plus, ATPEs, which is the precursor for your adenosine triphosphate, your ATP in the cell. This is powerful in the sprouted wheat after only 3 days. Huge.
Cool. So that's what should we call it? That's a symbolic interpretation of the tomb that Jesus stayed in there, as you see it then. It's a message in that. It's an esoteric lesson, correct?
Indeed, it's one of his parables. And if you really get into the numerology of the original Greek text and the Hebrew text of the Old Testament, you're talking about depths of meaning that go way beyond what you're reading in English, by the way. Okay? So when I say, that the Bible literally holds the code of understanding, I'm being very literal here, all right? We've been programmed as a society and world culture, The Bible is just another book. It really doesn't mean that. No. It's the Word, literally the Word of God. And as a scientist, I'm just amazed at the depths of knowledge that are hidden in those pages.
Cool. All right. Well, that's a positive note. Let's kind of begin to wrap up on that then, and because we've talked about a lot of detrimental things today. But of course, as usual, I want to thank you for your time and of course for sharing your you know perspective with us. We always like to bring on different people on the program and just get a broad scope out there. And you've helped us to bring a different flavor today. So thank you for that. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Heinrich.
Please give out your website again, and if there's anything else, by the way, you'd like to leave us with if, in terms of if you have any you know, books or any articles out there that you want to promote or where people can find out more, up to you. Please go ahead.
Well, yeah, real quickly, my personal blog is www.atrue, T-R-U-E, Ott, O-T-T, and True is really my Christian given name on my birth certificate. I didn't change it. That's really my name. My company, my business that I do is actually a mineral supplement company. Based on all this research that I found, Heinrich, I came to the conclusion that, you know, we got to supplement minerals because that's the basic building blocks really of all health. And my files are full worldwide of stories over the last 15 years of people that have reversed problem health conditions. My company is Mother Earth Minerals. The website there, if you want to check it out, is www.meminerals.com. meminerals.com.
All right, there we go. True Ott, thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
God bless you, Heinrich. Thanks.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's our program for today. Take what you can and leave the rest. Thank you for listening. We'll be back with more in just a few days with Lynn Picknett on Lucifer Revised. After this, we have Tom Horn on the abdication of the Pope and Vatican disclosure. Later, Richard Hoagland will talk about torsion field measurements at Chichen Itza. We'll discuss his arrest by Mexican police while taking measurements there on the 21st of December 2012. We have all our upcoming guests listed in the Radio Archive. Until next time, please take good care of yourself, and we will talk more soon.